Chapter 9. The Body Language of Flirting and Fancying. In the 1989 hit film When Harry Met Sally, the couple stop at a restaurant on the way to New York. Over hamburgers, they bicker about how men and women see and make love. To show how vain men are all too easy to fool, Sally, played by Meg Ryan, gives a virtuoso display of a girl having an orgasm. All a girl has to do is breathe ever more frantically, loll her head back, and start screaming, "Yes, yes, yes, it's good." The other diners listen in. One woman says she'll have whatever Meg Ryan is eating. Harry, played by Billy Crystal, gets embarrassed, and not just because his friend is making a spectacle of herself. The deeper reason is that men do not like to be reminded of the fact that women can fake orgasms. Very wittily, the scene shows that we never know what someone really feels. That is why we are so eager to read the body language of attraction and arousal. Even today, 40 years after the sexually permissive society started to permit, sex is still surrounded by many taboos, and taboos mean anxiety, and anxiety shows in body language. In this chapter, I look at flirting and personal space, gay flirting, differences in the way men and women communicate, where men and women look when talking to each other, and how personality affects sexual interaction. Exercise 9.1, Signs of Love. How do you know if someone fancies you? Write down at least 4 key things you think are good clues. If you are in a relationship, what signs do you look for to tell whether your partner is in a romantic mood? If it's a good relationship, ask your partner, "Do you recognize those signs as something you do when you want to get me in a loving mood?" Michael Argyle, the academic I mentioned in Chapter 1, pioneered studies of how men and women look at each other and look away. This is one of the oldest eye ballets in the world. You look at someone who interests you, but you don't want them to realize you are keen, so you look away. Then, out of the corner of your eye, you wait for them to look at you, which will show you whether they are interested too. The way we look at someone else is something of a precision skill. This applies especially when a man and a woman meet for the first time. The situation is tense and risky. Neither knows what the other person thinks, feels, or wants. Usually, we tend to be less direct because we worry about being rejected. The Oxford Social Research Centre warns that women should be careful about flaunting their body language, as men are all too ready to mistake friendliness for flirting, and flirting for mad, passionate desire. But that, of course, does not mean that women never initiate flirting. In Psychology Today, Monica Moore, 1995, reported what is known as a meta-analysis of studies of flirting. Looking at a mass of research, Moore found that women use 52 different nonverbal courtship behaviors. These included glancing, gazing, primping, preening, smiling, lip-licking, pouting, giggling, laughing, and nodding. Her research slammed the myth that it is always men who start the dance. Often girls take the first step. There were many instances, Moore saw, when a woman looked round a room to spot any likely talent. When her eyes lit on a likely candidate, a girl tended to flash the short, darting glance, looking at him quickly, quickly looking away, looking back, and then away again. Many women managed this in a shy, sly, and indirect way. In today's world, however, where magazines for preteen girls often discuss sex, women are frequently more overt. Moore even saw a few women hike up their skirts so the man they fancied could ogle more of their legs. But when they realized other men were looking at their thighs, these come-and-get-me girls quickly pulled down their skirts again. Moore found many examples of flirting body language, including the eyebrow flash, an exaggerated raising of the eyebrows of both eyes, followed by a rapid lowering, the coy smile, tilting the head down, looking away at an angle, turning the head to expose some of the neck. Many experts see these signs of female submissiveness, but Moore argues this is a mistake. These moves are not submissive because their point is to orchestrate courtship, and the one who orchestrate moves is not powerless. Moore is not the only expert to think that we need to be more modern and not view flirting as a battle of the strong male and the submissive female. Tim Perper, 1999, of the University of Philadelphia, argues that men who flirt produce gestures that may look dominant, such as sticking out their chests and strutting around. But don't let the bravado fool you. The dominant flirt may also show submissive gestures, such as bowing his head lower than the woman's. Women may also yo-yo between the dominant and the submissive, Perper notes. A woman may droop her head, turn slightly, and bare her neck, but then lift her eyes and lean forward with her breasts held out, and that doesn't look submissive at all, he argues. The latest research concludes that no one is ever totally dominant in a good flirtation. Instead, there is a subtle, rhythmical, and playful back and forth. A couple synchronize. She turns, he turns. She picks up her drink, he picks up his drink. Skillful operators do it gradually. You can show a stranger you're interested across a crowded room by looking at him or her and trying to hold the gaze for roughly 1 second. Much more than 1 second tends to be perceived as threatening. If the subject of your interest keeps eye contact with you for more than 1 second, he or she might well be interested too. What happens next is important. If, after the 1 second plus, the subject looks away and does not look back at you in the next 30 seconds, you can assume they have no real interest in you. But if you catch them looking back to meet your eye a second time, they probably like you. Flirting and personal space. When you try to flirt with someone, the distance you keep from them matters. First, don't try and get carried away because you feel randy or romantic. Your potential flirt may feel differently. Look, notice how far they stay from you. That reveals much about their feelings towards you. Second, if you haven't established eye contact yet, it is far too early to even think about flirting. When you are about 2 small steps away, you are on the border between the social zone, 120 to 360 centimeters, and the personal zone, 45 to 120 centimeters. If your hoped-for flirt smiles or returns your gaze, you can come closer. The best distance is arm's length, or just under a meter. Any closer, and you're moving into the intimate zone border reserved for lovers, family, and very close friends. This might make your target uncomfortable. Exercise 9.2. Self-observation. How do you behave when you flirt? What tells you whether it is serious or not? Try to remember the first time you flirted. Look objectively at your flirt's posture. Encouraging signs are if he or she is also leaning forward and has an open posture. Women, experiments show, are more likely to tilt their head to one side when they are interested. Another positive sign is mirroring. When the mirror neurons are firing and your partner gets into a posture similar to yours, mirror image postures, where one person's left side matches the other person's right side, are the strongest sign of rapport. It is usually best if people are not consciously aware of someone deliberately echoing their postures, though they will still view a person who does this quite favorably. But don't go too far, especially these days, when so many people now are savvy about body language. Barrier signals. If the person you are trying to flirt with is not keen, they may respond with obvious barrier signals, such as turning away or crossing their arms. There is also a very subtle keep out sign to watch for. The not keen may rub his neck and point his elbow upwards at you. Back off, if that is the reaction. If only the person's head is turned towards you, while the rest of the body is orientated in another direction, this too is a negative sign. A woman also can use a handbag as a barrier. Moore also noted the ways women slow down a flirtation or stop the whole tango. To slow down, a woman will tend to orientate her body away slightly, cross her arms across her chest, or refuse eye contact. To finito the tango in its tracks, so there won't be no chance of it ever resuming, Moore saw women might frown, sneer, shake their heads from side to side, put their hands in their pockets, stare over the bloke's head, flirt with other men, or just yawn. Moore also observed situations in which men show the sensitivity of an armadillo. Among desperate don't-bore-me manoeuvres women had to resort to, some held a strand of their hair up to their eyes, message, I'd rather examine my split ends than spend another moment with you, or the ultimate turn-off, some women picked their teeth. The best flirting distance. The rules for the best distance for flirting differ depending on whether you are face-to-face or side-by-side. When side-by-side with someone, eye contact is inevitably less direct and less intense. Each of you has to turn your head to look directly at the other person. To compensate, and this is unconscious, you nudge and huddle a bit closer than arm's length. Gay flirting. Gay flirting has been studied less than heterosexual flirting, but some research hints at interesting differences. Marnie Hall, 1999, a San Francisco psychologist, remembers that back in the 1950s, gay women stuck to inflexible gender roles. Butch women did the male stuff. They held their bodies tight, lit cigarettes with a dominating flourish, bought drinks, opened doors, and swaggered. On the other hand, femmes would wiggle their hips and use indirect feminine wiles. In the 1960s, that changed, and lesbians shied away from artifice. In the 1990s, however, the butch-femme distinction came back, but with one big difference. Today's lesbians have a sense of irony and wit about the whole charade, and the butch-femme distinction is less polarized. The gender roles are more scrambled, with dominant femmes and soft butches, Hall observes. Irony is interesting here. You don't find it that often in straight flirting, because even if women are a little bit more likely to take the initiative than in the past, sex roles are still set in the mold. Male homosexuals also flirt in a way that may surprise heteros. Social psychologist Timothy Perper observed two gay men locked in a stalemate of sustained eye contact for 45 minutes. Only then did one of them make the next move. That was a slow couple. Perper has also seen two gay men fast forward in 2 minutes through the whole flirting ritual of gaze, approach, talk, turn, touch, synchronize, and so to bed in a way Samuel Pepys would have approved of. Such dazzling speed is unusual in heterosexual relationships. Even the great lover Casanova usually took an hour, and quite often a day, to consummate his liaisons. Gay men who want to commit can also now take dating courses, which began at the Harvey Milk Institute in San Francisco in the 1990s. One topic is the repertoire of gestures straight women use when they are seeking partners. Gay men are encouraged to learn how straight women do it. Finally, I must record a confusing flirting incident on a train. A gay lawyer, Anthony, sat opposite a gay prison officer, Tracy. They hadn't met before, but after half an hour, they were flirting enthusiastically and arranging to go out together, so that he could pick up men and she could pick up women. Their flirting signals were similar to those you might see a heterosexual pair exhibiting, except that Tracy and Anthony occasionally slapped each other's hands in high fives while shouting gay pride. When men and women talk. Deborah Tannen is one of the world's experts on the difference in the ways men and women listen and talk. I interviewed her for New Scientist in 1992, after she had published a book called You Just Don't Understand, 1992. Tannen told me women frequently complain that their husbands or partners don't talk to them. She referred me to her book, Divorce Talk, which claims that most women, but only a few men, give lack of communication as the reason for their divorce. As half the marriages in the USA fail, Tannen added, this amounts to a virtual epidemic of failed conversation. A familiar cartoon summed it up for her. Husband, sitting at the breakfast table, reading the morning paper, which is in front of his face, while his wife glares at the newsprint. He wants to read, she wants to talk. It's the linguistic battle of the sexes, according to Tannen, and one that causes much suffering, avoidable suffering, in her opinion. Tannen conceded that when women accuse men of not listening, and men protest, "I am listening," the men are often right, but their body language does not make the women think that the men are paying attention. Something has gone wrong in the mechanics of male-female conversation, Tannen said. The problem starts, according to Tannen, as soon as a man and woman position themselves to talk. When she studied videotapes made by psychologist Bruce Dorville of children and adults talking to their best friends of the same sex, I found that at every age, the girls and women faced each other directly, their eyes anchored on each other's faces. At every age, the boys and men sat at angles to each other and looked elsewhere in the room, periodically glancing at each other. But when men face away from them, women interpret this as indifference. The creeps aren't listening. And that leads to bitterness and hostility. The reasons women think men don't listen can be even simpler. Lynette Hirschman, a linguist, found women made more listener noises, such as mm-hmm, uh-huh, and yeah, to show they were in tune with their partner. Men make far fewer such noises, and women interpret the almost silence to mean men couldn't care less what they're saying. Men, on the other hand, interpret these small burbles of noise as meaning, just get on with it, darling, or don't make a fuss, signs of impatience. Let's be honest, gentlemen, and I write here as a man, of course. We men usually hate it when a girl says, we need to talk. We know she will want to talk about the relationship and not Real Madrid. We know we shouldn't sigh inwardly, but hey, chaps, football is more interesting than feelings. I jest. A young woman told Tannen that whenever she said she wanted to talk, her boyfriend would lie down on the floor, close his eyes, and put his arm over his face. She took this to mean that he'd rather take a nap than listen to her. But her boyfriend insisted that he was making the supreme sacrifice of listening, with his ears fully attuned. He shut his eyes so he could concentrate on her every syllable. She didn't believe a word he said, but after listening to Tannen, she found the courage to explain how frustrated he was making her, and why. The next time she made it obvious she wanted to talk, her boyfriend lay down as usual and covered his eyes. She muzzled her usual irritation, made sure he really was listening, and was amazed by what followed. The boyfriend sat up and looked at her, thrilled. She asked why. He said, "You like me to look at you when we talk, so I'll try to do it." Problem solved, but it took courage and compromise from both of them. Where men and women look. Men are all too apt to stare at a woman's breast rather than her face, but women tend to look desirable men up and down from head to toe. Exercise 9.3. Self-observation. Where do you think you look? If you have a video camera, video yourself looking at two people of the opposite sex, one person you know and one person you hardly know, for 5 minutes. Let them do the same. Play the video back, and you should be able to spot roughly where you and they are looking. Personality. I have suggested that personality affects body language. It also affects the way and the speed at which people interact sexually, and how body language reveals that. For example, Eysenck's theory of personality has implications for sex. He quipped that, when all is said and done, more is said than done. Extroverts are more impatient, get bored more easily, and become sexually aroused faster. As a result, men who are extroverts will want to hurry towards sex, and probably through sex. Introverts, on the other hand, will proceed more slowly, which would make them better lovers if it was not for the fact that they also get more anxious. Problems are likely when two lovers, or would-be lovers, have different personality styles. They may find it hard to adapt to each other's rhythms. So the classic mismatch is the get your clothes off in a hurry extrovert and the I get so anxious please don't rush introvert. And the risk is that the one in a hurry is so eager he doesn't notice the signs that say please slow down. For men especially, it's wise to analyze your own past and face up to the question of whether you get too keen too fast and whether this betrays itself in your body language. Men need to recognize when the signals they are getting are just friendly, as opposed to ready for romance cues. Tip: watch out for please get away signals, such as a woman who turns away from you or crosses her arms when you are about to kiss her. The stages of sexual arousal. Flirting often does lead to sex, of course, and there is as much body language in the bedroom as in the boardroom. To understand intimate body language, it is worth looking at the work of two important researchers into sexual behavior, William Masters and Virginia Johnson. They spent 20 years studying how our bodies respond before, during, and after we make love. In their lab, Masters and Johnson wired up volunteers and studied their pulse rate, skin response, eye dilation, erections, vaginal dilation, blood pressure, and much else in sexual situations. Their results led them to develop a theory of the stages of sexual arousal. The first two stages deal with the prelude to making love and are very clearly about body language. Stage 1 is arousal. The pulse races, breathing gets quicker, men begin to get an erection, women get tingly feelings, the pupils dilate. Animals have courtship rituals, but once they begin the sexual act, it is usually quick. Human beings, however, enjoy pleasure and the anticipation of pleasure through foreplay. As foreplay intensifies, the tension builds, and you wait, wait, wait for release. Stage 2 is the plateau stage. Masters and Johnson named it this because foreplay builds to a pitch of excitement, a plateau, if you like. Most women and men have to spend time in this highly excited state before they can reach orgasm. As we start to make love, our bodies react in quite dramatic ways. Our breathing becomes quicker, our pupils dilate, and our galvanic skin responses increase. There are also important changes in the genital area in both women and men. When you are excited, it is not always easy to pay attention to your partner's body language, but it is wise to do so. Is he or she returning your kisses and your touching? Are you making every move first? Is there any sign that your partner is tense? Does he or she pull away? It is hardly unusual to be anxious the first time you go to bed with someone. Very normal anxieties are, is this happening too fast? Does he or she love me? Am I sexy enough? What does he or she expect of a sex partner? The sensitive and smart thing is to be alert to any last-minute signs of stress or of displacement activity which suggests doubt. Some of the most obvious signs of stress or doubt are shown by body alignment. Remember the acid test. You might be wrong. She may not see you as the man of her dreams, but as a nice, but not particularly fanciable, bloke. Men need to be especially sensitive and not assume that they are going to score in the next 60 seconds. The robotic eye. I want to end this chapter on a technological note. Some of us seek and see love in very strange places. A lecturer at the Society for Literature and Science in Pittsburgh, USA, in November 1997, reported that a woman found herself involuntarily flattered when a robot she was working on followed her with its camera eyes as she crossed the room. The machine seemed to love her. Hurrah! I now want to turn to a very different issue, lying. To get in the mood, just think of how many words you can use for not telling the truth. Lying, fibbing, making it up, pretending, conning, deceiving, falsifying, fabricating, telling porkies. Is it any accident that there are so many words for this particular human activity? I think not. Chapter 10. The Body Language of Lying. The philosopher, Friedrich Nietzsche, said lying was a condition of life. Understanding body language can help us spot when people are lying, and we can learn to be better at this than lie detectors. As you read this chapter, try to be honest about your motivation. In particular, face up to the following. Do you want to find out how to lie better? Or spot when people are lying to you? Or both? In this chapter, I will look at the psychology of lying and the six signs of lying. The psychology of lying. We may not like to face up to this truth, but we are a lying species. Bella DiPaolo, 1994, of the University of Virginia, and her colleagues asked 147 people, aged between 18 and 71, to keep diaries of all the falsehoods they told in 1 week. Most people lied once or twice a day. A fifth admitted that, if they spent more than 10 minutes with someone else, they told a lie. During their week of, we hope, but we doubt, honest self-observation, the diary keepers deceived about 30% of those who they talked to. Extroverted, sociable people were slightly more likely to lie. Relationships between teens and their parents are especially dishonest. College students lie to their mothers in 1 out of 2 conversations, DiPaolo reported. We often justify lying on the grounds that it makes life easier for our loved ones. I know you love watching football on TV, so I pretend to like it too. Couples who date lie to each other in about 1/3 of their interactions. Sadly, but not surprisingly, we tell big lies to the people we are closest to. The person you love is probably the person you lie to most. So since most of us dislike being lied to, spotting the non-verbal cues that suggest someone is lying is important. Women, it seems, are naturally better at this, and they are better at learning to improve their spot-the-lie skills. DiPaolo asked pairs of same-sex friends to see if they could spot lies the other person told. Women's, am I being told a porky, detection skills improved slightly when their subjects were tested again 6 months later, but the men did not get better. No one seems, however, to have dared to do the killer study and look at whether men can tell when women are lying and women can tell when men are lying. It is not just in personal situations that we need to spot whether someone is lying. In 1990, I made a film for Channel 4 called The False Confessions File. Someone leaked to me secret guidelines used by police forces to train detectives to spot the body language of lying. The telltale signs were said to be simple. Suspects who were lying tended to fidget, sweat, and jiggle their knees. I poked some fun at this in the film, as I imagined master criminals might have the sense not to fidget all the time. Emma Barrett of Psychology and Crime News has looked at recent research and discovered that much relies on looking at how Western students behave when deceiving in relatively low-stakes situations. Research on whether law enforcement officers can detect deception usually involves them sitting in front of video clips of, you guessed it, Western students. It is different, and more encouraging, when the subjects are criminals rather than psychology students. Albert Ridge, Samantha Mann, and their colleagues at Portsmouth University studied what happened when experienced police officers looked at video clips from real suspect interviews. where ground truth was known and the stakes were high. The officers wanted to get convictions, and the suspects wanted to get away scot-free. The police officers judged 4 sets of clips. In 72% of the cases, they spotted the lies. This is much better than the usual 50 to 60% hit rate typically found in deception studies. Officers were equally good at detecting truth, 70% accuracy. Ironically, given how well they were doing, the officers tended to think they were not being that accurate, and tended to be overly modest about, rather than overconfident, in their performance, Emma Barrett noted. They made mistakes when they relied too much on obvious cues, the kind I poked fun at in my film, including signs of nervousness, and yes, knee bobbling. In 1991, Paul Ekman told the New York Times that one reason it is hard to spot lies is that fear of being disbelieved looks the same as the fear of being caught lying. An innocent person, under stress, who is desperate to be believed, may well also fidget and even bobble their knees. Psychologists have tried hard to come up with an infallible guide to whether you are being lied to. Burgoon, Knapp, and Miller, 1994, argue that there are 6 different nonverbal cues that someone is lying. 6 signs of lying. 1. Cues that indicate you are anxious, like fidgeting, or, as Joe Navarro, 2003, observed, touching the back of your neck or nose. 2. Cues that suggest you are being reticent or withdrawing from the situation, such as looking down. 3. Behaviors that are very different from the way you normally behave. 4. Behaviors that suggest you dislike what you are doing. 5. Cues showing underlying vagueness. A very clear one is when you hesitate for a long time before saying something, or appear uncertain. 6. Incongruous responses or mixed messages. Some personality factors also correlate with lying. People who are self-confident tend to lie better when they are under pressure, as do people who are more physically attractive. The phrases people use may also give clues. James W. Penbaker, 2001, of Southern Methodist University in the USA, studied the words people chose when they lie. Liars tended to use fewer first-person words like I or my, and were less likely to use emotional words such as hurt or angry. Cognitive words, like understood or realize, and so-called exclusive words, such as but or without, words that distinguish what is and what is not. So it is time to be honest with yourself about lying and body language. Exercise 10.1. Self-observation. The lying quiz. 1. I tell lies. A. Hardly ever. B. Only when I have no alternative. C. Quite often. D. Very often. 2. When I lie, I feel A. Guilty. B. Not too bothered. 3. If I think someone is lying to me, I watch carefully. A. To see if they are looking straight at me. B. To see if there are any changes in their voice. C. To see if they start to fidget. 4. If someone says they don't believe me, I tend to A. React guiltily. B. Tough it out by smiling at them. C. Tell them not to be silly. 5. I last told a lie. A. Minutes ago. B. Last week. C. So long ago I can't remember. 6. I tell lies. A. To spare people pain. B. Because I can get away with it. C. Because I don't want anyone to know what I really think or feel. D. Because it makes me feel superior. 7. Which profession tells least lies? A. Journalist. B. Politician. C. Doctor. 8. I have to work myself up to tell a lie. A. Never. B. Quite often. C. Always. 9. Thou shalt not bear false witness. A. Was fine for the olden days of the Bible. B. Is not a commandment anyone takes seriously now. C. Is good advice. 10. If someone says, I never lie, A. I admire them. B. I require proof. C. I know they're lying. Answers. Work out your score by counting the number of T's and F's in your responses according to the following. Question 1. A. T. B. X. C. L. D. F. Question 2. A. T. B. F. Question 3. No score. Question 4. A. T. B. X. C. F. Question 5. A. F. B. T. C. F. Question 6. A. X. B. F. C. F. D. F. Question 7. No score. Question 8. A. F. B. X. C. T. Question 9. A. F. B. F. C. T. Question 10. A. T. B. F. C. F. The more T's you score, the more you think telling the truth is a good idea. The more F's you score, the more F's, the more of a liar you are, and proud of it. Ignore X and L, which indicate lying under pressure and a muddled response. Questions 3 and 7 do not really affect those issues, but tell you something about your perception of liars. Body language can help you spot lies, but how does it help you lie effectively? You need to become very aware of what you do when you tell lies. The best advice I can give is to avoid exhibiting any of the 6 signs of lying on page 133 when you are lying. Chapter 11. Cross-Cultural Body Language. We live in a multicultural society, in an interdependent world. This means we need to understand the body language of different cultures, as misunderstanding can cause confusion and conflict. When you are dealing with Chinese or Japanese or Saudi people, for example, you should remember they have a different sense of personal space. In Northern Europe, it is considered impolite to be closer than 1.33 meters to someone unless you are intimate. In Southern Europe, and especially in Arab countries, personal space is far smaller. If you stand too far away from someone, that seems rude. But some aspects of body language are the same all over the world. Even in New Guinea, people recognize Western expressions of anger, sadness, fear, and joy, although in one study, some of the alleged primitive tribesmen were confused between surprise and fear expressions. The way someone looks always conveys information about the self, especially about sex, age, and social status. Certain countries, however, may limit what information should be transmitted non-verbally. In Japan, for example, non-verbal communication is expected to carry information about status, but not about feelings. Michael Argyle, my old teacher, studied the way English, Italian, and Japanese performed when they looked at emotional expressions on faces. English and Italian subjects could identify their own and each other's emotions, but found it hard to read the Japanese, and even the Japanese themselves were not brilliant at identifying the emotional expressions of other Japanese people. The reality is not that the Japanese are always inscrutable, but that they are inscrutable in public and tend not to show what they feel when anyone else is looking. It used to be much the same in British public schools. To confirm this, the ever-ingenious Paul Ekman investigated whether there were differences between American and Japanese subjects while they watched horror films meant to provoke fear and disgust. When they thought they were alone, the Japanese showed revulsion and looked scared and upset, just like average Americans. But when the Japanese subjects watched the film with someone else present, they tended to smile to mask their feelings of disgust and fear. Ekman and Friesen, 1971. If facial expressions mean much the same the world over, this is not true of expressions of the body. If you want to look at two cultures, imagine what happens when Sheikh Yamani from Cairo meets Mr. Yamamoto from Tokyo. Mr. Yamamoto is used to Japanese conversation, which involves a great deal of ritual and prescribed answers. Also, as we have seen, it is not polite for Japanese people to show emotions in public, especially negative emotions. A poker face is considered ideal in public. In private, a faint smile is acceptable. The Japanese also make less eye contact than the rest of us. Instead, they look at the neck. In particular, they avoid looking at the faces of their superiors. They fidget if they have to gaze into an interviewer's eyes, reflecting the upsetting effects of eye-to-eye contact. Bond and Kamai, 1976. Japanese society is loosening up, and there is a big punk scene, but hierarchy still matters. Japanese men and women take great care to establish the correct relationship by the right degree of bowing and the right tone of voice. They still bow when they meet someone, and the depth and duration of the appropriate bow depends on their relative status. In the British House of Commons, no MP may call another MP a liar. The same inhibition is found everywhere in Japan. But sometimes Mr. Yamamoto needs to say someone is lying, and when he does, there is a gesture which is acceptable. He will lick his forefinger and stroke his eyebrow. Scollin and Wong Scollin, 1994. Touching also varies between cultures. In public places in Japan, there is very little bodily contact, not even handshakes. Contrast all this with Arab countries, where there is more touching and less privacy than in the West. Like the Japanese, Arabs are also very sensitive to nonverbal behavior, but Arab men have few problems showing their feelings. They sometimes act in a way like we in the West see as berserk, going so far as to tear their clothing and scream in public. I saw some of that in my childhood. My father was an Arab Jew who had been born in Palestine in 1908, when it was ruled by the Sultan in Istanbul. My father could be physically very demonstrative, hugging me as if our lives depended on it, but he could also yell and scream like a demented dervish. Once, when he had lost a lot of money on the stock market, he yelled so loudly that the neighbors knocked on our door. They wondered, in a polite British way, if someone was being murdered. The scene was especially surreal because my father had taken off his trousers and was shouting in his long johns. My mother, who came from the Balkans and was educated in France, often called my father a barbarian because she found his displays of anger so bizarre. Incidentally, my father was not a camel trader, but a lawyer with a PhD, but under stress, he reverted to his childhood ways. In conversation, two Arab men will look into one another's eyes more than would two Americans or two Englishmen. Argyll, 1975. Males will touch one another on the arm or hand, particularly to emphasize a point or a joke. When they greet each other, men will often hold hands loosely, and may even kiss if they have not seen one another for some time. Some gestures will also have particular meanings. For example, by bringing the tips of the upward-pointing thumb and finger of one hand to form a pyramid, and shaking the hand up and down from the wrist, is a sign that a man thinks a woman is beautiful. I was exposed to this florid body language when I was 16, and had to meet a distant cousin of my father's at the posh Dorchester Hotel. The man, who was a millionaire, insisted on holding my hand for 10 minutes. I'd only met him once before, and I was mortified. These very different styles of body language make it complicated for Arabs and Japanese to communicate easily. An Arab who tries to show respect by holding the gaze of a Japanese person will offend him, for instance. Sheikh Yamani will think it is acceptable to show how he feels, but Mr. Yamamoto will think a man who emotes so much is either insane or impolite. If you are going to do business abroad, it is wise to mug up on local customs in non-verbal communication. I have come across a number of gestures that I initially had no idea it was unwise to make. Do not go on holiday to Greece and extend your arms horizontally, palms down, towards someone else. This is an insult which says, "Go to hell twice." Other palm-down gestures have specific cultural meanings, including the widespread hand wag for no, the Saudi hand slap showing contempt, and the Italian forearm thrust are used as a sexual insult. Italians also touch their ears to suggest the man is effeminate. In Portugal and Spain, if you tilt your head sideways and put your cheek in the palm of your hand, you are saying that the person opposite is a weak-livered sissy. Again, avoid that one. We also need to remember, and be alive to, the fact that the world is changing, sometimes for the better, and in unexpected ways. Shock, horror, Greek lady touches me. I sat in a small cafe in the center of Athens. I had already downed one small brandy, and wanted another. The elderly owner paid no attention to me, even though I waved my arm up in the air, and I was getting annoyed because this utterly obvious signal was being ignored. So I got up, walked over, and said, "May I have another brandy, please?" The grey-haired lady then did something that surprised me. She put her hand on my arm. I was astonished. I felt as if she had made a truly indecent suggestion in front of the Greek pastries, but I had the sense to see that it was not any kind of come-on. She was a respectable woman in her 50s, running a respectable cafe. She wanted, I realized, to apologize for neglecting me. She didn't have the English, and I didn't have the Greek, so she held my arm for 5 or 10 seconds. I smiled at her, and she smiled back, that simplest of human exchanges. 2 minutes later, a very large brandy and a particularly gooey chocolate goodie were placed in front of me. In the 1970s, Greek women in their 50s tended to dress in grandma black sacks from which they would never emerge. It would have been indecent for a respectable middle-aged Greek woman to touch a male stranger's flesh. I forgot to explain that I was sleeveless. The fact the lady touched my bare arm suggests some taboos are dying in some cultures. Body language is a constant, and is constantly changing. Chapter 12. The Joys of Understanding Body Language. I hope that by now my main message is clear. You need to learn how to analyze your own body language and how to observe that of your friends, lovers, brothers, sisters, parents, and colleagues. This book should have given you the confidence to do it and a good sense of what specific gestures mean. It is not rocket science, and it is fun. The main lessons remain. Pay attention, not just to what people say, but to every aspect of their behavior. Use your eyes wisely, i.e., practice looking out of the corner of your eyes. Remember not to indulge in too much wishful thinking. The fact that someone smiles at you and takes your arm does not mean they necessarily want to sleep with you. Analyze your own body language habits. Decide what aspects of your own body language may reveal things about yourself you don't want to reveal. Learn to control the body language messages you give out. Use your answers to tests to analyze your own body language strengths and weaknesses. Then you can start to change and to deal with your weaknesses. Learn to laugh at your body language habits. Being able to laugh at yourself shows you have true self-confidence. The self-confidence that goes with being an MLB, a maestro of body language. Enjoy the self-awareness and awareness of others that comes with it.